Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Q Commentator. Thank you very much for joining me once again. I hope you are very well wherever you are listening to this one. We are in the midst of season two, going into a second episode. Thank you so much to all of you that have been in touch following the first episode, speaking to Sky Sports' Miles Harrison. Thank you to Justin Middleton, commentator in South Africa, who said, "This is gold dust. They say you should never meet your heroes as you'll see their flaws. This is not the case with Miles, a world-class broadcaster, but exceptionally humble. It makes you say, I want to be like him." Well, thank you, Justin. Yeah, I couldn't have put it better myself. James, one of the Rugby United crew, a real gem with the wonderfully engaging Sky Sports Miles. Of course, that's his handle on Twitter. What a voice and talent he is. One of the greats in sports, especially rugby commentary. Martin Thompson, love the Harrison episode, Nick. Really enjoy your description of the voice as opposed to your voice. Really shows how it's an entity in its own right, which needs training and nurturing. Yeah, absolutely. Spot on, Martin. It is an instrument, after all, that we choose to use in that way. John Rodwell, what a fantastic story from Miles about him getting an early leg up in his career from the late great Brian Clough in this week's Q Commentator. It certainly was an amazing story that I didn't see coming at all. Hashtag genuine legend. Yeah, sometimes needs the word genuine, the amount of times legend is banded about. Andy Render, a good listen, if a little on the long side. Well, yes, Andy, and as I think I replied to you, Miles and I spoke for an hour and 40 minutes, and that got edited down beyond that. So you did have a relatively short version, even if it was still pretty long. And really nice story about Cluffy, indeed it was. So thank you for those reactions via Twitter to @QCommentator. Do keep them coming. And if you can, please do leave a review on iTunes. It's lovely getting those, and that's where you can really help other people find the show. So please, if you're enjoying the series, I'd be super grateful for some warm words on Apple Podcasts. I should probably be calling it that now, shouldn't I? Apple Podcasts. Anyway, yeah, that would be wonderful. So to this week then, as we continue into Series 2 with a very special live episode. I was honoured to be asked to be part of Podcast Live Rugby, a live event bringing the rugby fans down to the Union Ale House in Twickenham's East Stand for a meeting of rugby podders and a chance for Q Commentator to get on the road by including a very recently retired commentary voice of the BBC. I should really apologise to those who don't like rugby, but I promise this will be the last rugby commentator for a while. Although by the time you've listened to this, if you don't know this great man, you'll understand why he had to feature in our live episode. It is, of course, the incomparable Ian Robertson. Now, Robbo's been a regular on the after dinner and club speaking circuit for donkey's years, so I knew that expecting him to stick to my questions about the detail of commentary may be a tricky task, given that he'll have a microphone in his hand and a live audience in front of him. So in the circumstances, I think we got the perfect amount of commentary chat mixed in with a few of Robbo's favourite tales and some reenactment of his most memorable moments. So prepare to be entertained. Incidentally, thanks to Adam Redman from the Pro 14 podcast Under the Sticks, who was also at the live event, who has said ahead of this one, "If you find any interview more entertaining this week, please let me know, because this chat was absorbing and hilarious in equal measure." Well, thank you. No pressure there, you have been told. But among the giggles, I do think it's interesting to note where Ian talks about not analysing the game as a lead commentator. It's as if you could put his longevity and warmth to his audience down to the fact that he's simply worked on keeping his nose clean, just saying what he saw. Could be a little lesson in that for many of us working today. So let's mix our way into the live event then, as I, hand over to myself. It's a special live episode of Q Commentator. Over to me. Thank you very much. What a very warm reception. Delighted to be here. Thank you to Phil and to Matt and everybody at Podcast Live for having me. Here we are at Twickenham Stadium, which is rather nice. I am absolutely thrilled today to be able to welcome someone who, Phil gave a pretty good introduction to. He, of course, is pretty famous for those words on BBC Radio 5 Live and the World Feed from the 2003 Rugby World Cup when Mr. Wilkinson dropped a certain goal. I understand that you have to pay an awful lot of money to get that clip to IMG, so you can just try and reenact it in your own mind. Or maybe we'll get him to do it himself. But without further ado, please welcome to join me the fantastic Mr. Ian Robertson. A Calcutta Cup winning fly half for Scotland in 1970, a former English teacher...
As recently as 1970.
Yeah. that already sets the tone about how much talking I'm going to get away with today. An English teacher of one Tony Blair, a man who joined the BBC 47 years ago and retired last year. This year. November. Oh, wait, anyway. We'll
January,
get on to that.
January the 7th.
We'll get on to that.
Shall I check the rest of your research?
Thanks very much.
Save a lot of time.
Robbo, it's great to have you here for this very special episode. Thank you for taking the time. Last time I saw you here, you were blagging your way into the commentator's room on the West Stand, having no longer received accreditation, but knowing exactly which doors to get through and make sure your mates had a ref link for the game.
No, I took the head of the benches with me, and he was opening all the doors.
Excellent.
So it was all right. And it was in this room, and I had to crack a few jokes, and it was great. I then had a pint of Guinness. This is before the match. A lot of people thought before I did every commentary I should have had a pint of Guinness. But it was great.
Now, I'm sure we're going to hear a few yarns from you over the course of the next hour, but if I may, I'd like to take you back a bit to begin with as to how in 1972 you transitioned from being player to commentator.
Getting the player out of my blood was very simple. I managed to get the medial ligaments completely wrecked in this knee and the cruciates in this knee in a double tackle by a couple of fat forwards. And that was the end of my career. I was 24 at the time, but I was within a week of my 25th birthday. And that was the last game I played. And I was teaching at Fettes College. Taught Tony Blair. He was very nice. He did a thing for my retirement podcast that Matt Dawson had organised, which I knew nothing about. He said, "Oh, come along, and we're just going to do a quick sort of 15-minute chat. You don't need to prepare anything." And then I got there, and he started the podcast saying that we were going to have a bit of fun in the next hour and a half, which I thought, that's a lot of 15 minutes. And we're going to start off with a tribute to you from a man you taught at Fettes College who went on to quite high things in the political world. And, oh, yes, I said, Tony Blair. Yes, I taught him to read and write. Said he wasn't the easiest of pupils. He had long hair and played in the school rock and roll band and thought he was part of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. And then they said, "Well, that's your tribute to him. Now listen to his tribute to you." Uh-huh. And he said, "Oh, I've got to say, it's absolute pleasure to be here to pay tribute to you. You're an inspirational teacher," and said all the right things a politician would. Didn't believe in any of them, but he just said so many so many nice things about me. And then when he finished, I said to Matt Dawson, I said, "Was that Rory Bremner?" So that was the start. Was great friends with Bill McLaren. He was the greatest rugby commentator there's ever been or ever will be.
No disagreement there?
No. No, just an absolute genius and a perfectionist and the nicest man in the world. And he said, when I was then injured and out, "Would you like to come to one or two commentaries I do, and we have an ex-international and you could chip in and enjoy it?" So I started that in 1971. and went with him, and that was my first introduction to him and his phenomenal ability to do the best of everything.
Yeah, you'd have been, or he would have been 22 years your senior. What did he teach you?
Initially, he was saying how the what we call the extra voice is his role in life. But then he said, you really ought to try to do some commentaries and practice. So in a game where they were only doing the second half on BBC Scotland, then I would gibber away for a bit. And then he would tell me the 430 worst things I'd done in that particular broadcast and how, given 40 or 50 years, I might be able to develop into a commentator. And he was just great, and he just went over what he did and played back one or two of Cliff Morgan's commentaries and said, you see how he just lifted the whole moment of the match and did a brilliant commentary. And that was the Barbarians try, Gareth Edwards, and that. And he Bill was meant to do that match, but in the morning he was violently sick. And they said, who can we get? Because he was taken to hospital. And they said, well, Cliff Morgan's here today. But he'd not prepared anything for the match. And he was had to be brought from wherever he was to the Cardiff ground. And he had 40 minutes and he was on air doing the whole commentary and did that wonderful, wonderful try, which is regarded as one of the greatest tries of all time. So he was my second mentor. So I had no right to fail overall when I was brought up by Bill McLaren and Cliff Morgan. And they were just both geniuses, but both really nice people. And they didn't go around stabbing all the players in the back and ripping them to shreds. They just did their job. And how to describe... They said it's very, very easy. Just describe what you see. Don't try and be clever and analyze it and say this and that and this and that. Just describe what you see and make it as interesting as you can.
And how did you find those early commentaries? What did you sort of hone in as what you thought was the most important thing to bring to people?
Well, I don't know if anyone's seen a set of Bill McLaren's notes for a match. They're approximately 12 inches or 14 inches that way and go right across. And every player gets four lines on his sheet, green, red, blue, black. In each line, he knew what went into the green line, what went into the next line, the next line, the next line. And there'd be six or seven statistics in each line. So roughly 25 to 30 statistics on every single player. Nowadays, with eight replacements, we're looking at 46 players. So he had this sheet. It took him 18 hours a week to do. He was called a peripatetic school teacher. He did PE for three schools in the Borders and coached the rugby as well. And he fitted in 18 hours of doing his notes. So he saw my notes, which are just on the back of a postcard, and he said, that's not enough. And his notes, he said, if a player's injured for 10 minutes, I can talk about him for the whole 10 minutes. And if it's 20 minutes, I've enough information to talk for 20 minutes. What do you think you would do? I said, I could talk for 20 minutes. But that was how it all started, and I got all his notes, and I thought, God, this is it was just a work of art. And we did a tribute to him at the end of his career. He did 50 years of broadcasting, and we got a few adequate people to come in. David Coleman, we had Murray Walker. Five. Richie Benno.
Peter O'Sullivan. Over.
Peter O'Sullivan was there. And I thought I did well. I've written everything the horse has eaten, what comes out of his bum. I know everything about every horse in the Grand National. And he said, I look at his notes, I'm just a complete amateur. He said, and John Motson was horrified. he fell over and just cracked his head. He couldn't believe someone did twice as much homework as he did. It was just remarkable. Motti just said, I don't want one of these. It will haunt me the rest of my broadcasting life.
Yeah. Obviously, Bill was someone whose voice we became very familiar with, as indeed we have of yours over the years. Did you like your voice to begin with? Is it something you sort of had a relationship with? Obviously, apart from being what you spoke with, but did you like it when you listened to it back?
Now that's very interesting because I didn't listen to it back, but that's what a good commentator should do. Desmond Lynham, I don't know how many will remember him. Brian Butler, they were guys who did their commentary every Saturday. On a Monday, they came into the BBC on the fifth floor of Broadcasting House and go into the studio, put the headphones on, and listen to their whole commentary back just to see if they'd done it well, badly, brilliantly, and learn from it. And
which golf course were you on by this stage?
The nearest one. Yes. That's how they found me, when there's a big program and they were meant to get I did one good commentary in 47 years, which is enough at the BBC. and it was a little Johnny's drop goal. And I was on a golf course when they phoned me and they said, we've got to pay thousands of pounds for this. Can you just remember it and make a slight change in somewhere? And so I was on the golf course and we stopped everyone playing. Well, I got out onto the phone, the mobile, and did a commentary on the drop goal. And
can you still remember it?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, I can do it. I've got one other little commentary I want to do. Because I'll do it now. This got me into a bit of trouble at the BBC. I was not up in a court case, but I was slapped over the wrist, and they had a little look at a commentary I did, which was totally 100% factually correct. All I did was I gave statistics, and they were 100% right. But I was accused of bias by an irate listener from Grimsby. And that got me to have to go in and explain what I was doing. And you'll remember the match, 1999, Wales played England at, should have been Cardiff, shouldn't it? Wales, a home match in the Six Nations, a home match, be Cardiff. It wasn't, it was Wembley, because they were rebuilding Cardiff. And it was the final match of the Six Nations. The end of the final whistle, we'd know who was top and who was second, third, fourth, and fifth, only five teams. It was the last five nations. And I got into a little bit of trouble because as it got to the end, and I'm very friendly with Lawrence Dallaglio, and he's a great guy, but his decision-making that day could have been questioned because with about 5 or 6 minutes to go, England were leading by 6 points, and they got a penalty in front of the post in the 22, so little Johnny came up and got his ball, and Dallaglio said, no, kick to the corner, we'll score a try. So they kicked to the corner, threw in squint the ball, and it was cleared. So that 3 points would have finished the match. They got another kick, but this time they kicked to the other touchline. And that was very near the end, and they were penalised at the line-out, and the ball was kicked down to the halfway line, and then Wales won it. They didn't have the throw-in, but they won it. They drove on past the 10-metre line towards the 22, won the ball, it pinged along the line, and it went to Scott Gibbs. And I was doing the commentary, and it's a very simple commentary, but got me into a little bit of trouble. I said, and the ball comes to Scott Gibbs. He smashes between the two England centres. He goes round the back row. He sprints for the line, parts the full back, and he scores the try, which with the conversion means Scotland will be the Five Nations champions. Wait, this year, next year, and every year forevermore. And this lawyer said at the little court case, it was an internal thing. I said, what was wrong with that then? It was all true, and we won it. And my little guy won the case. He said, yeah, there's no case to answer. It was true. And it was. And we're still the Five Nations champions.
Holding on to that title.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be remiss of me not to go back and suggest whether you can... Can you still remember the Wilco commentary then? Can you give us a little bit of that for those that might not have heard it or might not remember it?
Yes. It's... who's not heard it?
So we've got good. It. We've got the right crowd in.
Yes, quite right.
Not a single arm
yes.
up.
Yes. It's mildly embarrassing. Are there any Scots in the room?
Yeah.
Right. That's enough. That's a working minority. and the
we need someone unprofessionally to screech in the background like Rob Andrew
Rob
did,
Andrew
don't we? Yeah.
He never worked for us again.
I know. That was him done.
Yeah, no, finished. There was a group in Scotland, about 4 million of them, felt that I was a little overexcited, and I praised Johnny in England rather more than the Scots would have particularly liked. But the reason was very, very simple, that 18 months before the World Cup, I was with three very famous England rugby players. We were having dinner and a few drinks, and by the end of it, we decided that the betting for that World Cup, New Zealand were 5-1 on, meaning that even if half their team didn't turn up, they'd still win every match and win the World Cup. So it was ridiculously short price. But they then had Australia were in, South Africa, and England were down at sort of sixth favourite, but with 18 months to go, and they were just building and developing this team. So we finished the dinner. I went home, and I have a very small account with Ladbrokes, and I phoned to say, what price are Tonga to win the World Cup in this year, 2000, in 2 years' time, in 2003? And they said, well, I'll have to get our rugby man. He's not in. We'll phone him and we'll phone you back. And they said, you can have 500-1, which was very short odds for Tonga. And then I mentioned a couple of other teams. I said, what about England? I said, are they about 100-1? No, Mr. Robertson, they're not. I said, well, I want a very small bet on England to win. Can you give, what's the biggest price you can give me? And they said, well, we're 20-1. I see William Hill are 33-1. So I said, well, give me 50-1. No, we'll give you 40-1. And I was paying for this call. I had to get value for my money. So I've now got that. And then he said, what would you like on? I said, £100. He said, just a moment, Mr. Robertson. He went off and he came back. He said, I just checked the 21 years you've had an account with us. Your biggest ever bet is £5 each way on a 4-1 favourite in an 8-runner race. I said, do you not think I've got 19 friends? We all want a fiver on it. So I got the bet. You're thinking, where is this story going? Well, it's going to Sydney, and it's going to the dying moments of the extra time in the World Cup. As the ball came back, my commentary went along the lines of, the ball comes back to Johnny Wilkinson. He drops for World Cup glory. It's high. It's straight. It's over. Johnny Wilkinson is England's hero yet again. And there's no time for Australia to come back. England have just won the World Cup, and I've won £4,000. I've won 4,000. Yes!
I'm not sure many of us remember hearing that last line. No. But they did well to lower the mic at that stage. I took the good fortune to speak to one of Robbo's former BBC colleagues, now commentator at BT Sport, Alistair Eakin, before speaking to Robbo today. And I said, are there any little key lines I should find out from Robbo? While you're talking about betting, he mentioned that you may occasionally have a small flutter. And he mentioned that in the early days of spread betting, There may have been. Now, I'm not sure whether Ali's got this confused with this with your last story, but I think it was about 1995. New Zealand were due to play Japan, and unused to setting the spread betting odds, so you know a team's going to win by how many on the rugby. The bookies set a price of something like plus 35 for New Zealand against Japan or something. And all Ali said to me was, "I'm not sure of the details, and with Robbo, you never know how much is true, but let's just say Robbo went all in." And I think he paid off his mortgage.
Yeah.
Because New Zealand went on to beat them 145 points to 17.
Yes, it was. It was. We were in Durban. The match wasn't, but we were in Durban on the day of that match. And the lift came down and I was waiting to go up. And a little Welsh guy got out and he said, "Oh, the rugby man." He said, "Have you seen the spread betting on the match?" One match that afternoon, and I said, "Oh, it's New Zealand-Japan." "No." He said, "Whoa!" He said, "It's a 30-point start for Japan. And, you know, it's ridiculous." And I said, "That is ridiculous, because the team that New Zealand picked was the absolute weakest team they could possibly pick, because they were not going to lose that match, whatever happened. And it was the final pool game. So they put in the 15 who would not have anything to do with the semi-finals and the final and so on. So they didn't need to risk any of their famous players. So the poor old bookies thought, oh, gosh, we haven't heard of half of these people. So what the spread betting gave a 30-point start. So I went in and had... No. He said, "And furthermore..." But I hadn't heard the fact. I got in the lift, pressed the button, got straight up to my room and on to Ladbrokes. And it wasn't actually, it was Sporting Index. And I phoned in and had a bet. And the nice guy there said, "Well, Mr. Robertson, you're having this large bet, but you know that New Zealand haven't picked their strongest team." "Oh, haven't they?" I said, "No, I didn't know that." "No, oh, no. Oh, I'll double my bet then." And he said, no, they haven't picked their strongest team." "No, I heard you." And I'm not telling you how much I had on, but it was quite good. And and actually, I was furious. No wonder they were reserve players, because they dropped the ball over the line under the post. That would have been another 400 quid I would have had. And a forward pass they gave when they didn't even need to pass. He was just passing to a prop forward because he'd never scored a try in international rugby, the prop forward. And no bloody wonder, because he dropped the ball. Yes. Yes. So, yes, it's what we call, I had a little tickle on that and it came off.
Very, very
If you've
good.
Got 4 years to spare, I could tell you all the losing bets I've had. Well, I need longer than that.
We'll leave that for another time.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
at some point we're going to try and talk about commentary anyway. Let's come back slightly. I just wanted to find out then from what you were learning from Bill McLaren, obviously from Cliff Morgan, and you know those words if you remember that Barbarian Strike, brilliant, brilliant as it comes through, and Gareth Edwards arriving like a steam train. It's so atmospheric, and these voices that we get used to hearing across all sport are so good at making these moments come alive in kind of symbiosis. And we've heard you obviously on the Wilco drop goal and on many, many more. And what do you think makes a good commentary, and what do you think maybe makes how a commentary has changed over maybe 40, 50 years? Do you think what makes a good commentary has changed?
No, a good commentary is when the two teams are playing really, really well. It's a great match. If you have that, it makes it so much easier than dragging a game where Wales had a Scotland-Wales game at Murrayfield and Clive Rowlands was the scrum half, and I think he kicked it 90 times in the match and into touch and a line out and back into touch, and it just went on and on and on. But what you want is a great game. And if you've got that, then all you have to do is just describe it. And it's the last... There's no formula, because commentary in anything, tennis, golf, cricket, commentary, it's the last of the great ad lib shows that you live off your wits. And you have to describe what you see.
Would you prepare anything from the top?
Bill McLaren, I'm going to sell him down the river here. No, he had four little lines on his big sheet, and it would be like an eel up a river. And then I thought, why do you do that? Well, it might be that it's a close thing and it suddenly happens. And I thought it was so weird that he actually had four little ad libs written down for each match.
Shattering the illusions of millions here, Robert.
Yes, yes, yes. But he never used them. No, he had them there in case an eel came onto the pitch and took it around.
Yeah, but would you write anything at the top? Obviously, you're being handed over from the studio and your commentator, Ian Robertson, and would you then have any scene setters that you'd pre-written, or would you just go...
No, ad-lib. Right. It's the last of the great ad-lib shows, that you just describe what you see, and you can't describe it until you see it. So, as you live off your wits.
Yeah, and so I guess that probably answers my next question in terms of approaching the big moments, obviously, in games like football or other sports, things can be almost more explosive. But in a rugby game, often you've got that build. It's coming down the line. You can see the try is going to be scored. You can know in your mind's eye that that's going to be the score that settles it with 20 seconds to go. Do you have that moment of thought as it's coming in going, I've got to pick the right line here. I've got to know exactly what I'm going to say here and feel any of that pressure?
No, because you can't. You can't say something that you think is going to happen, and if it doesn't happen, you're going to look a bit stupid. And all you do is describe what you actually see. But you've got to have a little reservoir, the back of the brain, to know that when the guy scores, it's his fifth try in the match, or he's now scored 100 points for his country. So you have to... A lot of statistics. Thank goodness, not as many as you need in cricket. You've got to know every bowler's analysis and his number of wickets and runs, and they have a team, and all the commentary, Sky and BBC... That they have so many statistics, and the guys there whipping them up as a batsman scores this run, that run, and he said how many fours and how many sixes has he hit. So that's all statistics there. In rugby, you've got to have sufficient. There are people who just churn out statistics, and that's crushingly dull in the middle of a match, and they miss a couple of tries being scored while they're reading out all their statistics. So it's to be prepared for anything is the answer. And Bill was a great ad-libber, and he did just have wonderful phrases. Mm. He was Gordon Brown, like a lighthouse in a desert up there, all on his own, and the other people running around base camp.
Yeah, all arms and legs like a mad octopus.
So it is very much, you just describe what you see, but the more information you have... And I didn't have hundreds of facts, but I had more than I ever showed anyone. So.
Yeah, it's good to know. The preparation was in there.
It was there.
You mentioned sort of what other people might do. What other sporting voices across the landscape have you enjoyed listening to over the years?
Well, the horse racing, Peter O'Sullivan, and radio, Peter Bromley, they do little. They had a stamp that they'd got developed that they bang that stamp on to the horse, Wayward Wanderer, and it would have the colours of the owner, which would be, say, white with three blue stripes. And if you have a Grand National and you've got 40 runners, they would have 40, the sheet, and it would have the colours of every jockey and then statistics about what the horse had done. And a massive amount of work would go into that. And I always felt sorry for them because they could have spent 2 hours learning what Wayward Wanderer was doing, and it's the Grand National's off, and it falls at the first, and I would think, I would just put the mic. every sport has its own way of tackling, and for the horse racing, Peter Bromley was also a magnificent commentator, every bit as good as Peter O'Sullivan, and they, in the end of the race, it's no use if one horse has gone 10 lengths clear and the donkey's there with the carrot trying to catch up, is no good, but the number of horse races that are close, or there's suddenly a horse explodes through and goes, and the commentary and the voice goes up. Yeah. And there's the great art when a new commentator starts and they've got the name of the player right, they're so excited they start having a huge climax in a horse race. No, there's still actually a mile and a half to go. Yeah. Just calm down. You'll explode before you get there.
Yeah, certainly.
You have to grade it.
Yeah. Certainly speaking to John Hunt, he was talking about it's almost what you call a linear commentary because you know you've got a start point and an end point,
yes.
And you've got to get there.
Did he put down O'Sullivan and Bromley as his?
We certainly talked about Peter O'Sullivan, and I remember actually, I think it was Murray Walker was on an episode of Wogan's chat show years ago, and he was they were talking about commentary, and he was saying that someone at one stage had talked to a few of the BBC commentators about, I think for sport relief or comic relief, about them each switching sports. And he said, Murray, where would you have ended up? And he said, well, you know, we're talking away to Peter O'Sullivan, and I don't know whether he may have mentioned yourself and various others. He says, but I always fancied doing the snooker, and then he just and then Murray Walker just went straight into, and he pulls the cue back and slams the ball into the pocket, and you just thought, yes.
Yes.
Absolutely brilliant. Did any other sports interest you? You're clearly a rugby man through and through. But did you ever
watching,
fancy...
yes. No.
Commentating on any others?
No. I think golf's good because you've got all day by the time they've waved the club 34 times and then eventually hit the ball, you've paint the whole picture and it'd be very, very easy.
Yeah. Peter Alice has always sounded like he is in a very comfortable armchair.
However, when asked if I would like to do a few Open Championships, I said, yes, that would be great, very relaxing. You know, they don't run around and jump on each other and smash them into the ground like rugby. So I thought this would be very civilised. But then I realised there's long gaps between, and some golfers, there's very long gaps between getting to their ball, picking their club, going back, checking the yardage, talking to their caddy, and so on and so on. And not only that, you're up at 8 o'clock in the morning, they're teeing off at 8:30, and the last lot are crawling in at 9 o'clock at night. And I thought, no, 80 minutes on a rugby, that's enough. I mean, to stay for 10 hours.
Yeah.
4 days in a row.
Yeah, no thanks.
No.
What about co-commentators? You've worked with Matt Dawson a lot, who you mentioned, as we mentioned Rob Andrew, who never never worked again after said famous screech.
That was good, actually, because Inverdale came up and congratulated him. He said, people will be talking about your scream forever and ever. And then he paid me the highest compliment I ever got from Inverdale, Well, this is the Johnny Wilkinson drop goal. And he said, and as far as you're concerned, that is definitely, definitely not the worst ever commentary you've done. And walked away. Walked away, he got my stone in the back of his head, but that was all right.
Yeah. But yeah, because the relationship between a lead commentator and their co-commentator seems to have changed, certainly over the last few years. A lot of broadcasters now favour having one, two, even three voices alongside the lead commentator. Mm-hmm. Have you felt that change over time? Have you found working with co-coms?
Yeah, we've, in rugby, had two. So, and they're both Northampton boys, Matt Dawson and Paul Grayson. But when we go off to Scotland, then we have either Gavin Hastings or Andy Irvine has always done it for the last 20 years. And similarly in Wales, we have Robert Jones. And so you've got to more or less even it up. So they would have one from each country. Mm. Club rugby, then it would be two that we use a lot. Yeah. And it's an art form in its own way. But they pick it up, these ex-internationals. Just trying to think if we have any front row forwards who do it, but it's pretty easy for
Brian Moore.
Oh yes, all right. Oh yes.
Well, we can leave that there, or not.
Yeah. Why did you say that? Why you spoil it? We've had a nice audience here. They've all been happy and friendly. Dear. All right. But they play an important part, and if you've got a good summariser, you've got a bit of gold dust.
Yeah, I mean, would you have to gesticulate in terms of radio to keep them quiet if they were about to come in at any stage? Working on that relationship, because you obviously don't want two people jumping in and screaming over each other.
You would think you would, but we don't. They just all seem to know.
Yeah.
And without being brought in, that Paul Grayson will have been down in the tunnel and he hasn't done anything for 15 minutes, so he'll chip in.
Yeah.
A loud voice to start with, so we now know he's taking over. But he's very, very good. They're very good analysts.
Yeah.
And it helps everybody at home.
Yeah, no, it certainly does.
Or, in our case, driving along motorways with Radio 5 on.
Yeah, indeed. And one
of the greatest compliments I got was a guy who nearly swerved off the road when I was describing something, and a lorry went off the road. Because he just went, oh, he was so excited. And he said it was a great commentary. several people were killed, but it
is. Yeah. No. Oh, well, he had a good time.
Yeah.
If you, we'll come to some questions, I think, in a couple of moments, if you guys have any out there. If you could sort of put in an order, obviously you did your last international game, England against Australia at Twickenham, that's right. But if you had the opportunity to either commentate on something else or perhaps put in a specific order for what you might have liked your last commentary to be, what would that perhaps have been?
I had a mild level of excitement in 1984 and 1990 when I'm trying to think who won the Six Nations.
Any ideas?
It wasn't Wales and it wasn't England. It wasn't Ireland. And France were just a joke, so yeah, I think it was Scotland.
Hooray!
Yeah. So that was good. It didn't happen very often, so.
So you'd like the chance to have called a big Scottish victory?
Yes. That and the Calder brothers manufactured a try, and the one when Gavin Hastings kicked ahead, and the ball bounced for Tony Stanger, and he got it and scored. I think I was at screaming level then.
Good. We've got a microphone in the room, so I don't know if anybody wants to just raise an arm. Yep, we've got one down here for Ian Robertson. Just let us know your name, first of all.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Hugh.
Hey, Hugh. Far away.
How do you spell Hugh? H-U-G-H or
right.
H-U-W?
G-H.
G-H. That good. You're okay, then.
Mr. Robertson, you might be able to answer a topic that my friends and I were discussing earlier in the aftermath of the England-Italy game last night, and I think quite a few rugby fans might have had the same thought. How does Stuart Barnes still have a job?
Fortunately, I had played Fenwick Golf Course and I didn't see the match. So what did he do last night? sport right.
Yeah, I think that was broadly speaking right. Yeah, he did his job.
He is a man that divides opinion, isn't he? Yes. As Miles Harrison likes him and everyone else doesn't.
I went to Cambridge University and I was very, very privileged. I mean, the poor boy, he went and got some sort of a degree out of Oxford and what can I say? No, he's a lively guy. I wouldn't. I thought that's very harsh. That it's not that easy to do the analysis. But is it that he? Do you think he's biased or wrong? Because we can all be right and wrong.
It's not so much the bias. It's more the dour manner that he brings to the game. It's however, if I think someone else wrote in an article that, you know, if he was presented with a Michelin starred meal, you know, it would be put in front of him and he would go, well, this is all very well, but Richie McCaw would have done it much better.
He knows the game, and he was a very good player. He was unfortunately at exactly the same time as Rob Andrew, and I think Rob Andrew started something like 74 games. And it was almost a toss a coin which was the better fly half, and he started about 15, so he was unlucky there. But he knows the game well, and he certainly is not aggressive. He doesn't say this is absolute disgrace, the idiot should never play again at any level for any club. He's not that sort of aggressive guy.
I know that that Miles Harrison has once said to me that if people are talking about Stuart Barnes, it means they're talking about having watched the game, so Sky are happy whether they're not liking Stuart or whether they are.
Yes, and so if Stuart Barnes were here, would you have got up and said that? Tosspot Fossil Robertson is an absolute. You've just come along to stir it up, eh?
Any more questions out there? Yes, one at the back there.
Anthony Archer, the game's changed a lot since 1970, in particular the use of technology and the TMO. Were you ever tempted to offer your own views on whether the referee got it right or not?
Yes. But it was a view. There was nothing certain. And the trouble in rugby, soccer's fairly easy, isn't it? They don't jump on top of each other and you know where they're all going. But when it's near a line and there's 16 sweaty bodies all and you can't see, it's very complicated. And the replays of all those things, I think it's absolutely right that they may change the laws a little bit on the high tackles, and now it's chest and it's going down all the time. So they hope to eradicate it because there's far too much concussion and aggressive illegal tackling. But I think I'm quite content with the way that the laws are played and the game is going.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by seeing how footballers are struggling with video-assisted stuff. It's as if they haven't paid any attention to the fact that we've been managing it just all right in rugby for a while. Yeah. I know some people think it takes a while and could still be quicker, but I think we do end up at the right result fairly swiftly.
Yeah, and most of the time.
Almost
all the time.
Yeah,
because if they're in doubt, then you don't give it.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got another question down the front. I can jump up here.
Robert, I just wanted to know, who was the greatest player you ever commentated?
Gareth Edwards. He owes me some money and I'm going to say that. No, Gareth Edwards. I never ever saw him make a mistake. He never dropped a pass. Every kick, if he was going to touch, it went to touch. Every break he made was the right way in the right direction. He was just a fabulous, fabulous player.
Any more questions? Yeah, we've got one at the back now. We're making you run around with that microphone, Matt.
Hi, Ian.
What's wrong with Leicester?
Ah,
yes. Chap wearing a Leicester Tigers shirt at the back of the room.
We have a history. We have no current style, unfortunately. It's probably like Preston North End or Blackpool Football Club. We have a fabulous history and just crap at the moment. But there's always another season. Question, Ian. If you could go back in time to when you first started your job with all your experience now, what three things would you tell yourself that you wished you could have known back when you started?
Very nice.
Yes. Well, the first is that I played at the right time because now, in my... We're going back 50 years, my last cap, 1970. And at that time, we had a great thing called the back row. And there was one flanker there, one flanker there, and a number eight. And throughout my career, they did all the tackling for the fly half. There's no huge difference. That they, I did one tackle in my whole life. And it was a mistake. It was in Buenos Aires. It was Scotland in the second test against Argentina. And they had a centre called Alessandro Travaglini. He was 6'4" and he was 17 stone. And he'd made a break. And it was from loose play, from the set play, I'd have expected my back row to go and knock him over. But he started in my direction, and I thought, oh, this is awful. So as he got close, I made up my mind, as he got close, I would just sidestep out the way and say, on you go, don't worry about me. But as I did that, it was exactly the moment he did his sidestep, which went that way. I can't tell you exactly what happened because I closed my eyes at this point. But as something hit me, I just wrapped my hands round and I've still got my eyes completely closed, and he came down just 6 inches short of the try line. And the captain of our team was a guy called Jim Telfer, Scotland Lions number eight, who he didn't have that much time for my defensive capabilities. But he just ran past, said, great tackle! Fuck me! It's you! So apart from that, I used the same pair of shorts for a whole season because I never got them dirty. I never got B-tackled. If it came and there were three people coming, I just slapped the ball on to the centre. Chris Ray ended up black and blue in every match. That's one. That's the equivalent of three.
Yeah, one, two and three all wrapped up. Any more out there on the floor? Yeah, we've got a couple. We've got one over here, yeah.
Hi there, Ian. Thinking back, and you were talking about your career, you know, finishing obviously way too short for as far as we were concerned. Who was the player that really inspired you, you know, either at club level or at international level? Because my interest in rugby goes way back to a wonderful time here, and I don't know if you'll remember it, but it was a very wet day, and Peter Brown took a penalty, digging up a lump of turf. I turned his back in it, yeah. Walked away, and they just came.
Took it by surprise.
Aye, absolutely. But player-wise, who was the one that really inspired you?
It was a contemporary of mine, Ian McGeachan. And we've been best friends now for donkey's years. We've done 8 books together on Lions tours and World Cups. And there's nothing in all of the match that he couldn't do. He knew exactly what every loose head forward should be doing, the hooker, everything. He was a centre and a fly half. And he when I finished, he came in and took over and played for the Lions. He's coached the Lions to test victories. And he just studied the game. He writes for the Telegraph. He's such a calm, quiet, friendly, he's probably never used a swear word in his whole life, relaxed guy, but he's a brilliant analyst. And I was lucky doing one tour where I met him for 40 minutes, 45 minutes, every second night of a whole tour to South Africa, and ended up with Guscott dropping a goal. And he said, what we're going to do is we're going to take the play to this touchline. And he was telling me all the tactics, which for a price I could have sold on to South Africa. No, I was 100% a McGeachan man. And and the theory that went in, and then when it would change and come back into the field and then go on to the left or come back, and the players would know which to do every time and why. And he analysed everything. Also gave phenomenal team talks just to lift people up. So he would be my very, very, very special rugby player, as well as Gareth Edwards.
Those relationships you can build with coaches as a commentator are really valuable, aren't they?
I've been very, very lucky.
I was doing an England women's commentary a few years ago and got to know Gary Street very well, the World Cup winning coach with them. And he sat with me during their training on the Friday ahead of the game on the Saturday and said, well, what I can tell you is the first three lineouts are going to come off the top and Amber Reid's going to come crashing up. We're just going to send it straight to 12. So it's just absolutely brilliant as a commentator, because then you can sound like Mystic Meg knowing exactly what's going to happen.
Yes, you look a bit England, like England. Mystic Meg.
Thanks, Robert. So, you know, England are set up here and, well, I wonder whether Amber Reid's going to be the one to crash this up. Oh, and here they go! It's just like absolutely brilliant. Very valuable. Right, a couple more that we've got. Yeah, one in the middle and one at the front here.
Questions for Ian, but I'm also keen to hear Nick's answer as well. If there's one piece of commentary you could have delivered that you hadn't, what would it be?
You go first.
Yeah,
I'll think of one.
I would probably go with one that I ended up as a ringtone. And for anybody that heard the first series of Q Commentator, you hear me slightly fanboying with Clive Tildesley about. Because as a Liverpool fan, the 3-0 down Istanbul evening, where the first goal back that Liverpool score, in some kind of prophetic, bizarre, as if he knows what's going to happen way, Clive Tildesley goes, hello, hello, here we go. And then, you know, Gerrard, it's in, it's Smeetster. I've got them all. But that, for him to sort of say that to the point that, because I always kind of describe commentary a bit, and particularly TV stuff when, I don't know, it might be a Formula One race or whatever it is, that you kind of, part of your job is to get people to put the newspaper down, because they might be sat there on a Sunday afternoon reading the paper. Oh! Hello, what's going on? And you sort of want to let them know that something is about to happen. It might not quite have happened, but it's time to alert them. And I think that, as far as Liverpool fans, you know, were that evening, to get them going, it couldn't, could it? And I think if to have been part of being able to get that out there, I think would have been quite fun.
I would have liked to have done the commentary of the Scotland-Wales game 1970. The commentary on me dropping a goal in front of the posts and scoring a try in the left-hand corner.
What would you say? Yeah, do you want to do it for us?
I'd have built it up, don't worry. And it wouldn't necessarily have been the drop goal was from 7 metres out under the posts from the halfway line.
Robbo, having you missing from our airwaves is something that we're having to get used to from your calls over, obviously, the big moments, but also every joyous smile that everybody had when a Five Live presenter said, and your commentary team of assistant, and Ian Robertson, thank you so much for everything all over the years and for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in thanking Mr. Ian Robertson.
Ian Robertson there, an amazing character. I'm very grateful for his time, and he certainly began by making sure I knew what the pecking order was, didn't he? But it was so lovely to delve into his back catalogue of stories, of which I think we heard about 2%, and for the live audience to be duly entertained. Well, I hope you as the listener were as well. On the commentary side, I'm still kind of intrigued that Robbo's view of good commentary from, I don't know, rugby match to a horse race seems fairly dependent on the quality of the game or the sport itself, which lays a bit of a challenge, I guess, to those who might be up-and-coming commentators who may not be getting the chance to commentate at the very top level of sport. Perhaps it's another example that if you can be good at the lower level stuff, well, it should in theory get easier the higher you climb. Food for thought there, not quite sure what I think, to be honest, but I mean, you're always going to have to keep working hard at it anyway, aren't you? But anyway, if you enjoyed that, please tell your friends, drop me a line on @NickHeathSport on Twitter or tag @QCommentator, and well, for an extra gold star, a review on Apple Podcasts would be superb. We've one more to come next week of this very mini series of Series 2. The small matter of a World Cup in Japan is going to delay things a little as I'm heading out there, but there will be a new episode next week. It's going to be a belter. Trust me on that one. But thanks for listening, and bye for now. This has been a Rugby Media production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.